Well, welcome everyone. I'm excited to interview Rick Weinman, the founder of Vortex Healing. I'm Jonathan Robinson, co-host of Awareness Explorers and a bunch of books and such. But I've taken a lot of Vortex Healing. I know a little bit about Rick because I've taken a lot of classes. I'm very impressed with his work. He's the author of Awakening Through the Veils and Vortex Healing. He's founded Vortex Healing a long time ago. He's been at it, teaches a lot of classes, amazing man, amazing transmission. You probably know of him, so I don't have to say much more, but you can find out more at vortexhealing.org. But today we're going to be talking about relationships and how they relate to energies. Rick knows a lot of psychological and spiritual stuff. So I'm going to follow my curiosity and we're going to see where this leads. So welcome, Rick. I'm happy to do this. And
this should be fun.
You know, I took many Vortex classes up to Core Veil, and you didn't talk about relationships much. So I have a bunch of questions. And the little that you did talk about, you know, you were looking at relationships through the different karmanauts, the different past things that people come to relationship with, and how that influences the relationship. But I'm wondering first, just to give us a little bit of overview of what you see before I get into more specific questions.
Okay. So first of all, people tend to think that they're making choices out of what they desire. And of course, what they desire plays into it. But in the bigger picture, they come into life with certain issues to work out, certain karma to work out, and, you know, a whole bunch of conditioning. And a path gets set up for them. So for instance, like the very earliest relationship people have in this life is with their parents. Well, actually, we can go back even a little earlier. The first relationship they have is with their body. Mm. And the body has whatever genetic patterns and such. But as that being that's going to be in that body starts to interface with it before there's even enough body to come in, it's sort of pulling on those genetics to express a certain way. Because genetics can express in more than one way. Right? And so the being, out of its conditioning and its issues, is already pulling on the genetics to express in a certain way to make that body feel, you know, like itself. And so then, you know, it's born. And what I've discovered is that when the baby is born, there are two divine structures that divinity, blueprints that divinity puts in. One, so imagine this baby has all these different possible ways that it can relate to its mother and its father. But there's a particular path that's laid out for it. So we want to sort of put the spotlight on one of those particular ways more than the other. And so this blueprint is like a groove in consciousness that gets the baby to respond to the mother in a particular way. The mother doesn't get one, the baby gets one. But then the mother starts to respond according to how the baby is responding to her, mm-hmm. and a relationship is set up. Now, I can give a lovely example about this. So my mother years ago was visiting, I was married to Suzanne at the time. And we would all be sitting around, and every time she would come into the room, there's this place in me that would just go, and I would leave the two of them, and I'd go and I would sit and meditate and clear it, and I'd come back into the room. Finally, after a few of these, I thought, okay, something else is going on here. And I sat with the divine source of our lineage, which I refer to as Merlin. And I said, you know, what's going on here? He showed me this blueprint, this upper dimensional blueprint that was still holding me in a certain pattern in relation to my mother. And we released that blueprint. I came back into the room and it was completely different. My response had completely changed. Now, if I hadn't done all kinds of other inner work first, clearing this blueprint wouldn't have created such a dramatic shift, but it was like this thing that was holding on, holding in this certain pattern. And when it released, like, so for the first time in my life, I had this kind of compassion for her. I saw her in terms of her own path and her own issues, and, you know, my heart opened to her, where before it was like still coming from a place of whatever I needed from her, you know, and what wasn't available, and, you know, my own reaction to that. So stuff gets set up very early on, and of course that becomes a sort of blueprint for other kinds of relationships we're gonna have, how we relate to each of our parents. And then people tend to think, okay, I've got this karma to play out with this person, but your karma is really just your own issues. You know, you may have experienced those issues with a particular person in the past, and you may get to, you know, have round two, but your karma is always between you and the divine. And so the divine is going to set up situations for you to explore whatever stuff it is that you have going on inside. And, you know, it's going to use your sense of separateness and the need for connection. When we're in separateness, we have this desire to connect, and that pulls us out to make connections. And then, of course, we've got this lovely thing called sexuality that wants to connect as well. And so it'll use that. And it'll use everything that's available in order to set up situations that then get played out as relationships. But throughout that whole play of relationships, of course, what's really happening is you're playing out your own unfolding, mm-hmm. as opposed to, relationships are the vehicle for that, as opposed to the end. You know, it's not like I'm on a path in order to be in this fantastic relationship. Whatever relationship or relationships I may be in of all kinds is the vehicle for my unfolding to happen. And they don't happen, you know, by accident in terms of even who you meet. You know, you may think, oh, I accidentally ran into someone at a particular place and, you know, we hit it off. An example of that, for instance, is my wife, Suzanne, who I had been married to for 20 years, no longer married, but when we met, there was all the stuff I had certain kinds of dreams and visions that ended up connecting to her and she as well, without going into all the detail of it. And I was, and a friend of mine, a psychic friend of mine, had a vision that matched one of Suzanne's visions that she had before we met, and she described the woman in the vision, which, you know, was Suzanne. And then I was going to give a class in Ireland, and registration was low, and I thought of canceling it and going to see Papaji in India, and I got this clear message: no, go give the class and then go see Mother Mira. And I'd been there about a week at Mother Mira's, and there was a knock on my door, and I've been meditating on and off all week, and I'm sort of really out there, and I open the door, and there's this lovely woman saying, I was told you can give me a ride to Mother Mira's.
Do you think that everybody's significant relationships are preordained, or is it more like as you enter into higher consciousness, you become more receptive to those types of guidances?
So preordained is sort of a loaded word.
Uh-huh.
So let's just sort of pick that word apart a little bit. So my own sense is that it's like, let's say you're planning a road trip to California from New York. You know, you're heading in a certain direction, and, you know, there's all kinds of different things that can happen along the way. Some of which may need to happen, and some of which, you know, may not need to happen. So my own sense is that there's a general path, and that it might be that today the divine goes, 3 years from now, you will meet so-and-so. So it wasn't in stone, you might say, before, it became written in stone today. So like I dated a woman years ago and we both had dreams of these children we were gonna have, but we didn't stay together. Mm. So it was part of the flux of possibility. But at any point, divine could have said, now, you know, this is a done deal, and arranges for it to happen the same way it arranged for me to meet Suzanne, you know, which had been building in the background. There's all kinds of detail I can add to that, but I won't go into that, even though it's a fun story.
Well, I appreciate, you know, we tend to look at relationships so personally and not realize everybody's bringing amazing amount of baggage, either from this life or the previous lives, and a lot of forces are involved. The question I have for you is, how can people make use of this information and their relationships in a way that helps them to grow spiritually?
Good question. So first of all, I would say the first thing one wants to do in light of the bigger picture is to surrender. Stuff's going to happen, and you know, from the place where you're, well, let's back up a step. So considering that your need for connection is part of what gets you into relationship, it's the biggest piece, actually. And that piece has a lot of neediness behind it, right? Because in separateness, you feel isolated, you feel unsafe. Connection makes you feel, well, connected. You're trying to get back to source, and the feeling of connectedness at least gives you, on a human emotional level, a certain feeling of source. And so one would start to examine how much a certain desperateness and addiction has come in to the relationship from this place of need for connection. Because that, of course, although it's sort of what gets you into relationship, it's a major gloom relationship, it also distorts relationship, because from a place of neediness, now I need a certain kind of something from you. And the moment I'm not getting it, not only am I unhappy, but because this becomes the need for connection, sort of a survival need, now I actually have some threat going on, right? So if I'm not getting what I want from you, then I'm going to feel threatened. I'm going to start feeling angry, you know, and you know, there goes the dynamic.
The crap show begins.
Yes, the crap show begins. And where the ball lands, nobody knows.
Exactly.
So that's one thing. The other thing is that, so people have this idea that they should stay in a relationship if it's good, and if it gets bad to a certain point, they should leave. I've always had a different philosophy about that. And what I've said is that only truth tells you whether you should stay or leave. Mm. You know, it could be the worst relationship you've ever been in, and it might be the best thing that you've ever had come your way in terms of your growth. Or that same horrible relationship could be something you should have left 3 years ago.
Right.
And if you try to figure it out, all you've got is, you know, is mind stuff, you know, and then you will make a mind decision that you can later regret because, you know, if I knew this, I would have changed my mind. So one needs to kind of drop in. Well, the mind, you have to let it play itself out and just let it do its thing. And then you drop into a quiet place and you just stay there until the truth of the relationship emerges. And if truth says you should leave, even if it's feeling good, it might be it's like a vacation, you're not really growing in it, then you need to leave. And if it says to stay, no matter how bad it is, you need to stay.
Well, that gets to the question of how do you know the difference between mind and true guidance. Just a quick story. I had to decide whether to marry a certain woman many years ago. And I decided I would go on a retreat in the Redwood Forest until guidance told me clearly one way or another. So the first night there, I'm in the middle of the forest and a guy comes up and says, "Oh, what are you doing here?" I said, "Well, I'm trying to decide about, you know, this woman, this whether I should get married." And he said, "Well, it's interesting that you say that because I realized that I just married the wrong woman 10 years ago, and now I'm trying to figure out what to do. I know I shouldn't have gotten married," you know, like that. I took that as a message and didn't marry that person. Now I'm happily married 20 years to my wife. But if that person was somehow giving me really clear message,
right?
But people often ask, how do you know the difference between your mind and intuitive guidance? How does that land in a person?
So in general, that's why I say you want to first let your mind like drive itself crazy until you're sort of exhausted on a mind level. Mm-hmm. And then you just sit as you did in the Redwoods. You sit until you just know, knowing just emerges. Mm-hmm. And you just have to keep sitting until knowing emerges. And when knowing emerges, you know that it's knowing. And because it wasn't anything to do with anything you were thinking, it's just a sudden knowing. It's not a gut feeling, it's just a knowing. And because it's a knowing, there's no regret afterwards because
it's
just what it was.
I found that the key ingredient there is real surrender. Like I really am okay and will follow either path. And that's what gets in the way is like when you have an agenda or like, this is, I hope you move me in this direction, that prevents that.
Right, exactly. And so, which is the word we started with, which is the word surrender. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to not just exhaust the mind almost, but almost exhaust all the pulls and pushes and mm-hmm. positions and until you there's not much of that's impacting. And then as you sit, some other truth emerges, whether that's some person that materializes in the forest or just you notice maybe that every time you in that quiet place, every time you think of that person, there's something that lights up, or the opposite, that's something that kind of, goes dark. And we teach in the foundational training in vortex healing, we teach a technique where we sort of take divine presence into our systems to get our minds out of it. And we just sort of sit with their presence and we ask a question, like, should I be with this person? Mm-hmm. And in that place of letting go into divine presence, if it's a yes, the body relaxes, it opens, it's a very obvious thing. And conversely, if it's a no, the body tightens, contracts. But again, it requires, as you say, a certain surrender into that presence. Otherwise, your mind's going to try to control the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, earlier you mentioned, used the term you cleared something with your mother. And I've taken a bunch of vortex trainings where there's transmission of great amount of energy through the avatar Merlin, who's no longer in body, and through using you. I wonder if you can say something about how people clear up some of the baggage that they bring up in a relationship through the vortex system. How do you view that?
So there's a lot of energetics that are involved when people get into a relationship. First of all, there's of course that need for connection that then connects, that gets reinforced through sexuality. And the way sexuality reinforces it is that it creates a cord. Some people have heard the term cord, and it's a two-way cord. So the cord goes from one to the other and the other back, and the cord holds the energy of that attachment, of that And it goes from it's a second chakra cord, but there's more. The first chakra in particular starts to resonate, create a resonance with the other person's first chakra, and other chakras can come into resonance as well. And I have seen where even other kinds of cords can get created. I had a relationship where my crown chakra ended up with a cord, you know, with the partner. And the cord in itself isn't a bad thing. It actually helps to hold the relationship. But it creates more of a problem when a relationship, quote, shouldn't be held together. Because now you've got this creation of this energetic that's like magnetism, you know, the magnet in a metal plate. You've got this cord and these resonances that are sort of holding things together when maybe it would be in everyone's best interest for it to come apart. In addition, people talk about how, you know, you look at an old couple and they almost look like they're, you know, they've sort of like mapped, not mapped, they've sort of patterned each other. So there's this kind of consciousness patterning where even after you break out of a relationship, you still have that. And and there's this one other thing that happens where the etheric body creates this sort of interweaving with the other person's etheric body. And so a relationship gets to a point where you leave, but you, all these things that were connecting it together are still there, right? The cord will still be there for a while. It may fall off naturally after some, you know, not too long period of time, or it may not. I once worked on a woman who was very scattered, and I realized she had cords to every relationship she'd ever been in, still active. You know, and as we released them one by one, she got more and more present.
Is there a way in Vortex to help people to release cords that?
Oh yeah, and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple in England who were separated, and they were still like at each other's throats. They were incredibly reactive to each other. And it's because even though you've separated, the other person is still in your field and you've gotten oversensitive, overreactive to them. And so little things just set you off. They were still like at each other's throats. And I sort of separated this etheric body interweaving, broke these resonances, released any cords. And there's also this relationship field that gets created in consciousness. And I cleared that out and a couple of other things. And then it was like, and the guy said, "Oh, I'm back in my own space." But it's like he was still, the two spaces were still so interwoven. And now he's back in his own space. Having his own space, now he has a buffer. And she had a buffer. So they stopped, like, you know, basically screaming at each other, because now they could, you know, they had their own space and they weren't so overreactive to each other. So yeah, we have fantastic tools for that kind of thing, and most people have no clue that this stuff is still going on. And yet, if you talk to people 2 months out of the after a relationship is broken up, even 6 months, even sometimes a year, they will say that they feel like that other person is still in their field. Right? And it's because it's true. And Vortex healers can shift all that very easily, actually.
When I know you have a term called karma knots, which are,
they're just issues.
Have you defined that?
A karma knot is just, it's just a focal point of an incarnate, of an issue you're carrying from life to life. It's just a focal point for that issue that ends up getting held in the spine.
And I assume that the less karma knots a person has, perhaps the less needy they will be in a relationship. Is that true?
Not necessarily. It might mean they have less issues, but it doesn't mean that they are They've woken up out of their separateness. And even when someone wakes up out of that separateness, it's sort of like an aha in the middle of all this conditioning, and the conditioning still has power. So you might say that they will forget their now inner connection and get lost in the habits of condition, and then they'll remember, oh, right. And then they get lost again. And it's an ongoing process of kind of coming back into the awakening, back into the awakening, until that becomes more and more the place that one's actually living from. And we call that the embodiment process.
And in the embodiment process, are people summoning vortex energy, summoning Merlin, or are they doing something else to help embody that process?
Variety of things. So anything that helps you to feel connected to the divine is going to make you feel connected inside and less needy outside. So any meditation that anyone does within vortex, outside of vortex, that connects them to divinity is going to, you know, support that process of being less needy. So then you still end up having, you know, a thing where you've got connection, but you've still got this conditioning that's, you know, that's fighting that connection. Hence, you know, what you see with so many priests who obviously have some connection to God, and yet, you know, their conditioning, you know, drives them to connect in inappropriate ways with, you know, males in the church.
You know? Well, let's talk about sex. You know, it seems like, with some people, there's immense amount of sexual attraction, with other people not. Unfortunately, sometimes a sexual attraction goes with somebody who you know isn't good for you, and the lack of sexual attraction goes with somebody who you know would be a great match otherwise. What's going on there?
Yeah, that can be a complicated picture as well. Sometimes you've had a past life sexual relationship with someone, and you know that, you know, is still sort of in the field, even though the person, you know, is, you know, completely wrong for you. My most dramatic case of that years ago when I was in my 20s was I met this woman that, on the one hand, I almost couldn't stand her, and on the other hand, I had this immense sexual attraction to her.
This is what makes God laugh, or right. something, I don't know.
Right. That relationship lasted about a day and a half.
But it was a good day and a half.
Well, it was mixed because there was all this conflict around it. So it just plays out like that. So people relate to each other, you know, from, it's like we're looking for connection, and we'll connect on whatever level is available for us to connect. So you may have someone who you can really connect to spiritually, and because you can connect to them spiritually, you know, you want to make more out of it, except those other places just don't align.
Right.
And so it's, you know, so what that sort of reflects back to us is looking back at where we're wanting to make more of it from, because that's a place where we're still, you know, looking for more connection, as opposed to having inner connection. At the same time, of course, you know, there's a human path here, you know, while everything is unfolding, and the worst thing people can do, well, it's not the worst, but anyway, it's not a very good thing, is, and people often do this, they're feeling that connection. That connection makes them feel needy, can make them feel jealous, can make them feel isolated, all this stuff. They don't like feeling any of those things, so they shut it down. And then they seem to be perfectly fine on their own, and they will tell you that they're fine on their own, except what they really have is all this suppressed desire for connection that, you know, is just, you know, it's sort of sad to see, because they're not experiencing connection. They've isolated themselves, you know, In blocking that need for connection, they're also isolating themselves because then they're not connecting.
And they're not being triggered by a relationship, so they might think that they're okay when really
Right.
they're just create a safe environment for themselves.
Right. But they end up looking kind of lonely inside. And I've seen this in a particular spiritual group for a different reason, where the spiritual group was, there was a lot of pressure to be like free and open and sexual and all this kind of stuff. And people weren't really in a place to do that, but there was all this pressure to do it. So they sort of squeezed themselves to do it. But in doing that, in order to forcing themselves out, that place that's more intimate and vulnerable, then retreated, right? And so when I would look at folks from this group, they would look very free and happy-ish on the outside, but they looked very lonely to me on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
As one develops a relationship with vortex energy and possibly Merlin, how can that help them to connect internally? What my experience of it is that you're opening to an energy that is your true nature, and that has made me less needy because I feel that love and peace. Is that the general way that you encourage people to use that in terms of being more successful, let's say, in life and relationships?
Yes, and again, we have the interconnection that's sort of being countered by all the leftover conditioning. And so we're using the healing tools to unhook that conditioning, unhook our identities with that conditioning, thin out the conditioning, and wherever you're doing that, you're basically, like, let's say you have a piece of personality or an aspect of personality that feels sad because of whatever's happened in the past. If you can transform that sadness, because that sadness now becomes conditioning that blocks you in certain ways and, you know, conditions your life and so on, and if you can transform the root consciousness in that, what does it become? It becomes love, because personality unconditioned is love, which is source. And so now it's not even a question of the sadness sort of making a connection to divinity and feeling better because of it. Now that sadness itself is gone, and what's taken its place is love. And so, you know, we're doing some of what you said. And as you're doing that, some of this kind of transformation is happening. But that transformation is really key, because then it's not just that you're connecting to love, but you start to experience yourself as that, because more and more of all this conditioned personality has been transformed into love. And so it becomes a whole different way that you're experiencing yourself.
Yeah, I get that. I'm a psychotherapist and I write books on relationships, and I work with a lot of couples, and you see these triggers that happen. And, you know, even very spiritual people, when they're triggered, it's like they're on automatic pilot.
Yes.
And, you know, I when I practice vortex, it's more of a meditative thing, although there's tools for other than that. But what can you tell people to do when they're so triggered in a relationship in that moment? Is there anything that you suggest that people do?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is, if you can become aware that you're being triggered, just stop and take a deep breath. and you know, and it sounds funny, but you know, every emotional pattern we have also has its own breathing pattern. You know, if you're scared, you're in a particular breathing pattern. And if you change that breathing pattern, it's hard to maintain the fear. So whatever is being triggered, if someone stops and takes a breath, you've already you've already sort of come out of that a bit just because your breathing pattern is no longer aligned, you know. And then what I would tell them next is, if you need to take another breath. And then, you know, until there's a certain space there, right, that you can see the trigger, you know, for what it is. And, you know, and to notice that your mind almost has an addiction to go back into it.
Mm-hmm.
And to recognize that that is just program. That's just conditioning. You've been conditioned to have that response, and you fine tune that response with your partner in order to become aware that you actually have that response, that kind of conditioning, and that that reaction is actually, regardless of whether it seems justified or not, it's actually your own issue. I mean, that's the hard part for people.
That is the hard part.
But she, but he, you know.
We always hope that when we tell them how wrong they are, that they'll say, oh, now I see what you're talking about. I've been wrong. Thank you for showing me that.
And so what I would say is that it doesn't matter whether they really did that or not,
yeah,
and whether they're really acting this way to you or not. The question is, why are you reacting this way to that reaction?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to notice how when you're reacting to that reaction, that creates another reaction on the other side as well, you know, or hardens the original reaction.
Like a series of dominoes.
Right. Like I recognize that with someone I knew, that I was tending to go into a particular place of where this sort of struggle place would come up in response to this other person who had a lot of struggle going on, you know, in them. And I could, and I didn't notice at the time, but once I unhooked that place that was, you know, transformed that place that was, you know, that was responding to the other person's struggle with my own sense of struggle, I could immediately sense that however much their sense of struggle would get directed in relation to me shifted.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it didn't take away whatever struggles they had inside, but it took away the amplification of that relation to me, because I was no longer creating a place that, you know, that activated it.
Yeah. The joke in workshops is when people come back a week later from workshops, they'll often say, I can't believe how much my mother changed while I was at that workshop, you know.
Right, right.
Seems like that.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Something I've wondered, you know, when COVID hit, you had to move a lot of your classes online.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I had the belief, like, well, I can feel your or Merlin's transmission in person. I thought, well, how is that transmission going to hit me in Northern California when you're in Boston or whatever? But it was very clear that that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that surprised me. I'm wondering, how the hell does that happen, that these transmissions can happen very directly to people from across the world?
Well, first of all, I'm not actually doing them. I'm just the vehicle for them.
Mm-hmm.
And as a vehicle, when COVID first hit, my energy system hadn't been developed by the divine source of the lineage to be able to do that at a distance. When I looked at it, you know, my system couldn't do it. But then the lineage, the divine source of the lineage, Merlin, reconfigured my energy system to be able to do it, and, you know, made it work. You know, I wouldn't have had a clue how to do that, and I don't have a clue about how to do transmissions. I just, you know, am aligned with, you know, with Merlin when I start, and the field gets created, and whatever needs to happen happens. I mean, I could be sitting here reading, I could fall asleep, it doesn't really matter because I'm not actually doing it. I just need to show up, you know, and my own path is to keep evolving my energy system to be able to do more and more for the students in the lineage.
That's miraculous. And one thing I've appreciated about your teachings is that it keeps you humble, and it keeps less of a focus on you and more on the energy and the transformation, yeah, rather than, you know, Rick is the thing, right, you know. And I think that's really helped with the whole system and helped keep it pure. And I appreciate that Merlin has done that in a way that seems to be working really well.
And I would say that all the teachers that Merlin has picked to, we have a bunch of other teachers, that all of them have that sense. It's not about them, you know, they're all just, you know, vehicles for Merlin, and their, you know, their sadhana, so to speak, is, you know, serving the lineage, mm-hmm, and facilitating people awakening and growing. One interesting thing along those lines in terms of relationships is that people, what you so often see is you'll have a relationship and one person starts to do meditation, vortex classes, whatever, you know, hanging out with, you know, with Amo or, you know, Neem Crowley Baba, whoever. And anyway, they, at some way, they wake up. Their partner could care less about that kind of stuff. And now you've got a new dynamic.
Mm.
And I've seen that go two different ways. One is where partner A wakes up and partner B goes, oh, you just seem so much more luscious. Yum, yum, yum. Or it goes the other way, where partner A wakes up and partner B is looking for the place where the person used to be and they're not there, and they feel abandoned, mm-hmm, and they get angry and upset and feel isolated and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. I've seen that go both ways.
I have too. Yeah. Well, this has been great. Is there anything that you want to cover that we haven't touched upon in terms of relationships?
Yeah, this is sort of an interesting thing. So coming back to, you know, to sexual interaction when you first meet people.
Mm-hmm.
So as we talked about, a cord gets created, and that cord makes you want to stay there. It acts as a certain kind of glue. So, you know, someone can have a, you know, one-night stand with someone they meet in a bar and then end up sticking together. And 20 years later, they wonder, you know, what the was I thinking? And so what I used to advise people in terms of casual relationships is that, or in general, they should only either sleep with people that they know they want to be with, or absolutely 100% certain they don't want to be with.
Uh-huh.
Because otherwise, sleeping with them is going to create all kinds of stuff that is going to keep them together when they wouldn't have really wanted to be together. But it'll hook into all these different systems and, you know, energetics, and, you know, and, you know, we'll create a relationship where perhaps a relationship shouldn't have been there. And of course, at the same time, if that's their path, you know, that's their path. So that's, I mean, that's always the other side of it is, yeah. Yeah, you were stupid and your stupidity created this path, and, you know, you've learned whatever you need to learn from it. But in the bigger picture, if one is simply surrendering to inner guidance, then one becomes aligned with truth in a different kind of way, which itself creates other kinds of possibilities. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not just that this is laid out and this is what has to be. There's a general unfolding, and the more aligned you are with truth, the more, in one hand, the more specific your path needs to take, because, you know, your path becomes more defined. At the same time, there's more possibility that wouldn't have been there before, when you had to simply play out conditioning, right? And so it's not surrender isn't a giving up. It's not like a giving up to whatever's happening to you. It's not like accepting victim kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's opening to the higher beingness, opening to divinity. And in that place, one sort of listens, and one keeps following what one hears in that place, you know, and that becomes the vehicle for then what gets us into relationship, what gets us out of relationship, what gets us in and out of friendships, or, you know, or vacations even. You know, you may have this idea, I need to have a vacation. But you know, whatever you're hearing says, you know, stay home, be quiet, you know, watch the, you know, baseball game. It could be anything, yeah. You know. And within that, if you're following it, then magical things just happen, because, you know, you're aligned with the source of all this magic in the universe.
Well, nice. Rick, I'm wondering if there's anything else that you'd like to add that we haven't touched upon yet.
Well, you know, we should probably talk about, you know, the role of love in relationships.
And it's pretty important.
For most people. And also, you know, how it relates to fantasy and projection, and, you know, and how to distinguish, like, love from just neediness and desire. And because we're in separation, we're also in separateness from love. You know, love is wholeness, and we're in separation, so we feel a lack, a loss of love. And our looking for connection is really us looking for love. Now, love is always there, of course, because it's what we are, but, you know, we're in this place feeling lack in relation to it. And so we're going to use everything that we know to try to connect to it. And sometimes even like artificially, like we can't get love, so we'll settle for money or settle for status or power or something like that. But it still becomes something that's ultimately, it's trying to find connection, trying to find home, trying to find love. So when we meet someone, if there is resonance there, and that resonance can be on different levels, it can be sexual, emotional, spiritual, then, you know, our hearts try to do something with that. You know, love wants to come in. Love wants to create wholeness there, and our neediness wants it as well. So the two get mixed together. You know, so when a person, quote, falls in love, it's not that there isn't love there. Love comes into that resonance. Wherever there's resonant connection, you know, love is there, but all this neediness comes in as well. And so there's a mix. And love doesn't create any problems in relationships. It's the other stuff that does.
And there's a lot of neediness.
Yep. You know, and so it helps to just sort of separate one from the other, because what people do is because they're feeling love with the neediness, they try to package the whole thing as love, which it isn't. The love actually has no neediness in it. It sort of sits in itself in wholeness. You can almost say it enjoys itself, it feels itself. But that place inside of it where it's going, oh, I want more, you know, it's trying to find a way to sort of package it, take it home, and, you know, control it, or, you know, box it up, you know, turn it into something. That's always going to be the neediness. And I'm not I don't want to make that wrong. There's nothing wrong in it. It's just a question of truth and clarity. You know, as humans, we're in separateness, and this is what we do. You know, and this is the divine playing itself out through the experience of separateness. But it's important to be clear about the difference for one's growth, one's evolution, and for one's clarity when one's in relationship. So, you know, it might start with more love than has room for later on when all these dynamics come in. It's not that that love wasn't there, but it can get lost because all this other stuff, you know, takes up center stage. It has a lot more energy. Love doesn't make the same amount of noise in that sense. And so we get all this stuff pulled up and all this drama. And then in the beginning, at least, the drama becomes kind of this manipulation to try to get more love from your partner. In the beginning, in the very beginning, things are maybe harmonious. I give to you, you give to me. There's a harmony there. And so there's an easier flow of love. And then, you know, someone somewhere along the line, someone isn't getting what they need. And eventually no one gets what they need because they can't get what they need from the other person. But someone recognizes first that they're not getting what they need. And they interpret that as the person is withholding love. Mm-hmm. So then there's this manipulation where maybe they start withholding love or doing other things. You know, it becomes this whole dance that eventually ends with arguments about who's supposed to take out the garbage. But it's ultimately about this manipulation to get what you need from the other person that you can never get anyway. Mm-hmm. So from a healthy point of view, in any relationship starts with the recognition that although you might be able to get some of whatever you want from the other person, you're never going to get that core place of need met because it's just not possible. And so that enables you to take responsibility for that place within yourself instead of insisting on getting it from the other person, and creates more space then for love to actually emerge because you've just eliminated a huge amount of drama, you know?
And you've eliminated trying to squeeze love out of someone that doesn't have it to give to you in that way.
Right. Well, it's not that you're squeezing love out. You've eliminated squeezing love out. You can never squeeze love out because love can't be squeezed. It's a non-squeezable commodity.
Non-fungible token.
Yeah. But you've stopped trying to squeeze what appears to you, what you interpret as love, which is, you know, them doing this for you or that for you, or being affectionate, or, you know, or being sexual or whatever that is. You know, you now have more freedom to let the other person be as they are, because what you most need, which is love, you recognize that you can only get that within yourself. And from getting it within yourself, it becomes something you can then share with the other person. And sharing is a really different thing than, you know, than trying to pull it. And then you get this one other scenario, which is, let's call it love fantasy, where, you know, there isn't a situation where you have a true sharing of love, like, let's say, someone in love with a rock star. You know, they've never met the rock star. You know, there's no love sharing there. But in their own need to feel love, they project that love onto the other person and project, you know, a relationship out of it, even if it's on a fantasy level. And again, it's not to make that wrong. You know, this is just what people need to do. But again, coming from truth, one simply recognizes what one's doing. And it's really easy to see with the rock star, harder to see in relationship. So you meet someone and there is this harmony there, and but let's say only so much. So there's a certain amount of real love shared there. And the other person wants, well, the person wants more than that. So they project a fantasy that they then sort of encapsulate onto that person, which of course is doomed to disaster because the person is not going to continue to fulfill that fantasy. But, you know, it's just something else we do. It's another kind of manipulation to try to get love, you know, from the outside. And
I see that in my therapy practice a lot. I wrote an article called Why Falling in Love is a Lot Like Psychosis. And, you know, people, after they go through that fantasy period, then they get to see what that person is actually like.
Yeah. And yet the love, even in that, you know, that initial period, whatever love you ever feel, even if it's fantasy, even if it's projected, love is still love. You know, you could be projecting, making fantasy out of it, but you can only make a fantasy out of love if you've got love to start with. And so that becomes kind of the return, you know, the whole return back to self. And from that place where you can feel that within yourself, that opens you up to be able to share it with anyone ultimately, especially as you move deeper into seeing all of creation as an expression of divinity, and your own sense of love is just an expression of that. It all sort of comes together and becomes, you know, loving compassion, you know, for all.
Well said, well said. Well, this has been great. People can find out more about Vortex at vortexhealing.org. You and I did an interview on Awareness Explorers that people can find at awarenessexplorers.com. And you had a great meditation in that interview, which they can also find on that website. And this has been fun. I hope people got some good stuff. It's always good to hang out with you, Rick.
Great to hang out with you. Thanks, Jonathan. Uh-huh.